Wow.
To everyone. That is, Imam shows his actually generosity to everyone so that they do not need the wealth and forgiveness of others. When Imam gives them even, so whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he himself naturally actually gives to all, and what Imam himself shows his generosity to people and actually gifts something to people. This is again among the beauties of that time.
Yes.
At that time again, we're talking about the development and settlement of the entire land in such a way that when the Holy Prophet raised.
Yeah.
And he will settle all the ruins and destructions. And whatever has been ruined and destructed, it will be settled. And wow. By the blessing of the presence of Imam Ali Salam. And this is very beautiful, that the entire surface of the earth will be covered with greenery.
All right.
Yeah. Again, let me repeat this sentence again to tell the brothers and sisters who are staying tuned and listening to us, and to tell them, look, we are not talking about myths, and we are not narrating stories. We are not actually saying something which has no reality. These are the promised words of the infallibles.
Okay.
The ones that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that there is no lie, there is no mystic, there is no error in their words, in their behaviors, in their wordings, in their sayings. So these are those that has been actually came to us from this lineage.
Yeah.
Again, the earth will find its vitality and freshness.
Okay.
All the treasuries of mines of the earth will be extracted.
Uh-huh.
And whatever has been hidden inside the earth will be handed over to the Imam of the time for the welfare and comfort of humans.
Okay.
So this picture, this beautiful picture, is the picture that we are receiving from the Mahdi of Utopia. Hopefully, with our du'as, inshallah, and the du'as of the respected listeners, we shall experience that time, inshallah, very soon.
Inshallah. Well, who is not waiting for the time wherein you see the generosity directly from the Imam? You see the destructed places being set up, and you see the earth being filled with greenery, with vitality and freshness, and hidden treasures to be coming out, and much more. I'm just imagining this world, and I'm just lost in this world, and I'm just only eager to witness that world. And that's why I compel myself again to say, Allahumma ajil li waliyyik al-faraj, may Allah hasten the reappearance of our Imam, inshallah. Thank you so much, Dr. Alavi, for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Superheroes and Beyond. Part 1.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security. A superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was a DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. He had strange and violent ways. No law or politician could stand in his way. He dealt with the U.S. politicians and officials in the most violent ways and would fight corruption and injustice, which were the main factors behind economic stagnation. The Iron Man turned into a panacea for the hopelessness in society and the sufferings in the governmental structure. Superman sought to restore hope and revive American society. The peace among the public would make the conditions better for the politicians to continue their policies. By selling 1.25 million copies of its book, the DC company made a hero for a society that lacked heroes and launched the era of the American superheroes. Superman's success in controlling public opinion encouraged DC to introduce another superhero named Batman. The difference was, Batman did not have any supernatural powers. A billionaire young man and reveler who fought with criminals to take revenge for his parents. He got his powers from extraneous exercises and using modern technologies. Unlike Superman, who had a godlike appearance, Batman looked like an ordinary man. He would build himself through training, cleverness, exercise, and gaining knowledge. The human aspect of Batman would assure the people who had no choice but to love superheroes that they don't need a savior from the outside and they could fight in the era of darkness and recession on their own by working hard. For ordinary people, the idea of becoming Batman was more real than becoming Superman. In the world of Batman, science and technology was like the real world, in a way that his tools and weapons could be made in the real world. Now, the U.S. was full of superheroes the companies who used to create superheroes had copied from the first two heroes. Superheroes who were sources of hope and culture for a desperate U.S. society. Second World War started. It was December 1940, a few months after the war had broken out. Another superhero became the symbol of American citizens, Captain America. He was the first American who got into a conflict with Hitler before the U.S. Army. Captain America was a thin young man who got an injection and turned into a bulky soldier whose primary goal was to destroy Hitler. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would rip a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America. When people had to accept restrictions caused by the war and give up many of their demands, the superheroes sought to change the situation in society. The pictorial advertisements emerged from comic books, and many posters were displayed with the aim of recruiting for the army, supporting the soldiers, buying stocks, and rationing goods. People who didn't allow the government to interfere in their lives the previous decade were now investing their savings for the war so the army could use the resources. On the other hand, after the male soldiers were deployed to the war, women were needed in important social activities. The government asked the women to do things that were considered masculine before the war. As the number of men dwindled, a different superhero stepped into the comic world, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman encouraged women and girls to get into the world of men. Just like male superheroes, she would violently and fiercely fight with the Nazi or Japanese enemies. game of superheroes worked. Superman tried to get enlisted in the army. Batman and Robin sold bonds for the war. As a result of the advertisement, $150 billion worth of bonds were sold during World War II. At that time, comic books were very popular among children and soldiers. In just 1 month, about 35,000 copies of Superman were delivered to U.S. military personnel throughout Europe. The war lasted for 5 years. No one thought a little boy and a fat man could end the war. The little boy and the fat man resemble the names of the characters in comic books. Simple and gentle names. But the names were chosen for the two bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The comic superheroes should have adapted themselves to a world that possesses nuclear weapons. A world filled with fear, overshadowed by atomic bombs. The atomic bombs were so powerful that they astonished everyone on the planet. The superheroes were dwarfed by the power of the atomic bombs. It was a problem for the publishers of comic books. The conditions for publishers of comic books had changed. Superheroes' deeds had become cliché, and the sales of comic books had nosedived. That was when some news left the U.S. and the world in amazement. The Soviet Union had also made atomic bombs. The U.S. was no longer the sole possessor of destructive bombs any longer. Now the best stories of comic books were about atomic bombs and the battle against communism. For Americans, a nuclear threat was synonymous with communism, a big enemy that wanted to destroy U.S. society. The U.S. government pocketed a huge wealth by selling weapons to other countries, changing tax laws during wartime, and selling bonds. Now, it only needed peace and quiet. The government that had become the post-war superpower now wanted to flash a dream image from the U.S. and display its power. The stories of Superman and Batman during the 1950s would advertise American lifestyle besides fighting communism. Both superheroes lived their normal lives with their families and even their pets, and unlike the previous two decades, when they fought with major powers, they pushed the importance of family, job, abiding by the law, and social norms. In the media in the decade, a typical American man was a stylish employee. He'd go home after work and enjoy being with his family and a housewife, unlike the wartime, who was encouraged to work outside the home, would go shopping and make the house an ideal place. The superheroes rushed to the rescue of the government to help direct public opinion. Superman became an ordinary employee, and his stories and romantic relationship with his fiancée, Lois Lane, became central to the story more than anything else.
The children were also at the center of the new lifestyle. Social welfare and economic stability led to the baby boom.
Jumping is every baby's idea of fun. And now you can get this jolly jumper, worth over $10, free for Ivory Snow box tops.
Genteel, used every day, gives more skin protection than your baby ever got with ordinary soap. So mild, they won't sting baby's eyes like soap.
Say, who are your new friends? Why, it's Ideal's Patty Playpal and her big brother, Peter Playpal.
This is a story about diapers that started life exactly alike. One set of diapers was washed in Ivory Snow, the safest possible soap.
In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and with their father's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands. The fear from the atomic bomb should have been turned into something normal for the baby boom generation. The American politicians knew very well it was necessary for managing the public opinion.
First, you duck, and then you cover. You may be in your schoolyard playing when the signal comes. That signal means to stop whatever you are doing and get to the nearest safe place fast. Always remember, a flash of an atomic bomb can come at any time, no matter where you may be. Sometimes the bomb might explode without any warning. Then the first thing we would know about it would be the flash. And that means duck and cover fast, wherever you are. There's no time to look around or wait. Be like Bert. When there is a flash, duck and cover, and do it fast.
Under those circumstances, another company that produced superhero stories named Marvel, whose books were more popular among the youth, started its job. They stepped into the world of superheroes with Captain America. Thanks to their awesome scriptwriters, they overtook DC. Marvel was more popular among the people and had more lifelike heroes. During the Atomic War, it created new characters for the young generation in America. The comic superheroes stepped in once again. A group of four people were dispatched to the Earth's orbit for research. The group owed their strength to atomic power. The relationship between the four heroes was like a family. A sister and her brother, a friend from the university, and two romantic friends formed a strong bond. They're much more humane than all previous superheroes. And besides fighting the enemy, the Fantastic Four would mostly argue with each other and had to face their personal problems. And that would make the new generation readers feel closer to them.
Thank you.
After the Fantastic Four and during the Atomic Crisis, Marvel introduced several other superheroes to the market. Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation, as he was repelled by society, he turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero, and the most popular one during the period, was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, a charity says long-term sickness has left 1.6 million British adults over the age of 50 unable to work. According to the charity, this is not only a national health issue, but it also has economic significance. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. More than 1.6 million British adults aged 50 and over are unable to work because of long-term sickness, amid ballooning NHS waiting lists and an exodus from the British workforce since the pandemic, according to the most detailed analysis yet of official data for this age group. The number has increased 20%, or 270,000 in 3 years, according to an analysis of the Office for National Statistics, ONS, figures by by Restless, a digital community and advocate for over 50s. The charity Restless says, not only is this a national health issue with thousands of people suffering silently, but it's increasingly an economic issue as well. Not least because many of these people would like to work in some capacity if the right job opportunities were available to them. Stuart Lewis, the chief executive of the charity Restless, made the comment. The data compared reasons for economic inactivity by age group in July to September 2019 and July to September 2022. It showed that of the 2.8 million people out of work because of long-term sickness, nearly 60% were aged over 50. In total, almost 40% of economically inactive 50 to 64-year-olds were out of work because of long-term sickness. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, promised a fundamental programme of reforms to get millions of people back to work in a keynote speech last week. The drive, Hunt said, would be the key to fixing the UK's productivity puzzle. A rise in long-term ill health has significantly reduced the size of Britain's potential workforce across all age groups since the pandemic. But it is a particularly large driver of the reduction in available workers in their 50s and 60s, with a number of 50 to 64-year-olds economically inactive, neither working nor job hunting, up by 375,000 since the COVID pandemic. In total, 27.6% of this age group were now inactive, an increase of 2.4 percentage points since before the COVID pandemic. This is significantly more than the 1.5 percentage point rise in the working age population as a whole. The website onenewspage.com has also covered this story and tells us more. More than 1.6 million adults aged 50 and over are unable to work because of long-term sickness amid lengthening National Health Service waiting lists and an exodus from the British workforce since the COVID pandemic, according to the most detailed analysis yet of official data for the 50 to 64 age group. The number has increased by 20% or by 270,000 in 3 years, according to an analysis of Office for National Statistics figures by the charity group Restless, a digital community and advocate for people aged over 50. Not only is this a national health issue with thousands of people suffering silently, but it's increasingly an economic issue as well. Not least because many of these people would like to work in one way or another if the right job opportunities were available to them, said Stuart Lewis, the chief executive of the charity Restless. Since the COVID pandemic, the National Health Service has struggled to keep up with demand, and waiting lists for routine operations have surged, hitting a record 7.2 million people in October in England. Those in need of hip and knee replacement surgery are having to wait up to 2 years for medical treatment. Kim Chaplin, a specialist advisor for work at the charity, the Centre for Ageing Better, said, "These new statistics make clear that long-term sickness is part of the challenge that the government needs to find solutions to. Among the thousands highlighted, many are currently stuck within or outside an employment support system that does not work for them," she added. John, a 64-year-old, was forced to retire last year because of severe arthritis in his hands. Unable to afford not to work, he went to Citizens Advice for guidance. He ended up volunteering for it and is now being trained as a debt advisor. "Citizens Advice Bureau saw past my physical disabilities to all that I have to offer to them," he said. "It didn't take much to turn me from being a burden to someone able to continue contributing to society but I know I'm incredibly lucky. Other employers would not have taken that attitude. The Federation of Small Businesses revealed research that showed finding staff with the right skills was a major barrier to growth for 1 in 3 of small firms in England and Wales. You can't tackle this skills crisis without attracting older people and disabled people into work, said David Hale, a spokesperson for Federation of Small Businesses. That would help small businesses desperate for staff, those entering or returning to the workforce and the economy overall. B. Boilio, a research economist at the Institute for Fiscal Studies, said the findings were troubling. This rise in long-term sickness for economically inactive people is very concerning, she said. It adds to growing evidence that the British population's health is worsening.
Why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Dini al-Islami, dini wal-Azam, ghayru dini, Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic rules or laws about purity according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but In 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Sheikh Javed is still our guest speaker. We are talking about Islamic laws, especially focusing on the rules of purification. In the last part of the last episode, Sheikh Javed, I asked you a question and unfortunately we ran short of time there. So let me repeat my question here, and I would like you actually to answer our dear audience with this question, especially the one that with a copy of the Quran that some people ask whether they can, go to the toilet while having a copy of the Quran in their pocket. Well, is that reprehensible or what?
Well, there are many such cases or scenarios where, for example, people go into the bathrooms and with their mobiles having Quranic applications.
Yes.
And in other software which contain Quran. So they wonder as to whether it's permissible to go in with their mobile phones,
yes.
Or they are carrying amulets, pages, and necklaces with Quran, with the names of Allah inscribed or embossed on those necklaces. So,
or the names of the imams.
The
for
names
example.
Of the infallible imams, yes. And the infallibles, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his household. Now, the religious authorities, including His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, has said that it is permissible to go in and there's no objection. It's not even makruh to carry.
Is that reprehensible?
It's not reprehensible. So you can carry, because the Quran, actually, what do you do with your for example, with your brain, you have the Quran in your mind, you have all the
exactly.
surahs memorized in the Quran. So, and then it's also not makruh even to remember the Allah and do zikr while you are in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. There's no objection to you doing this.
There's only the caution that you need to be careful that the Quran doesn't fall down, right?
Of course, that's something else. The issue is very different.
On the surface, which might be ritually impure.
It is absolutely forbidden to defile the Quran.
Or disrespect.
To disrespect it. And if, for example, the Quran falls into the gutter or into the toilet, then it is necessary to do whatever you can to bring it out and to purify it.
Right.
And also there are people who go with tattoos into what they have, the God's names or one the names of the infallibles are tattooed on their bodies.
Right.
So there's no objection to them going into the toilet. But it's, of course, forbidden for them to touch the names of Allah while they are impure. For example, if a person is in this state of ritual impurity and he has God's name on his skin tattooed on his skin, of course, it's not permissible for him to touch that name, mm-hmm. to touch the name of the Holy Prophet of Islam, and also his Ahlul Bayt.
I see.
With in this state of impurity.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break. It's an early break, but we'll come back after the break and ask Sheikh Javid more questions regarding the rules of purification. Thank you very much. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid is still our guest speaker, trying to provide us with answers to the questions related to the Islamic laws, especially the rules of purification according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, let me ask you this question. Is it reprehensible to urinate while standing?
Well, it is reprehensible, of course, to urinate while standing. And it's also reprehensible to urinate on a hard surface, like, for example,
a rock.
A rock while you are standing there, because it will splash.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's always the fear of
yes.
Splashing it or getting yourself.
Yeah.
Najas, you know.
Yes, you will be made impure because the small, tiny drops will spread around and it will make you impure.
Mm.
And also it is, it is makruh to, it's haram, of course, the haram cases I will mention later, but when it comes to makruh things, the religious authorities, including His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, has said that it is makruh to urinate in the barrows of the animals, you know, the place where the food is placed, so
the fodders.
Yeah, the fodder is placed so that the animals eat, and also in the stationary water. Okay, it is makruh to urinate in the water which is stationary.
What about the rivers?
The
which
rivers,
is flowing?
Yeah, it's not. They have not mentioned anything. It seems that it's not makruh to urinate in the water which is running.
Uh-huh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Sheikh Javid, what about this question? Is it still reprehensible to restrain one's urge to urinate?
Of course, it is, it is reprehensible to do so.
Like if you have no other options. For example, you're on a trip on a bus or somewhere like, you can't stop, or the bus driver doesn't stop, so you have to just keep it with you.
Those pressing conditions, they are different, you know. When you are on a bus or on board an airplane,
yes,
you cannot do anything about it. Of course, there is toilet
on
plane.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
But when you are on a bus, of course, the driver is not going to stop or pull over. And then you have to restrain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are not in that position, and when you can use a bathroom and go out and relieve yourself,
mm-hmm.
then it is makruh to restrain one's urge to urinate. And medically speaking, also, of course, the doctors have said that one should urinate whenever there is an urge, because it's going to have a negative effect mm-hmm. on your health. And that's why the religious authorities have said, based on the verses, based on the traditions that they have studied, and of course, and that the traditions which are found in our sources, that it is highly recommended for an individual that before going to bed, he should go to the bathroom and relieve himself. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's recommended.
And it's more relaxing too, of course, yes, sure. to go to sleep. But another quick question, just like, may you squeeze in here at the end of this episode, Sheikh Javid. I know that, you know, in the last episode when you were talking about, you know, some of the special cases were regarding urination. You said that it's haram, it's forbidden to urinate in the direction of the Qibla.
Yes.
But if one's toilet seat is fixed, like with a 20 to 20 degrees deviated from the direction of the Qibla, or what is to believe to be the direction of the Qibla, you know, is it still obligatory to change the direction of the toilet seat or not? That suffices it.
Well, it is if the deviation is as supposed to be 20 to 22 degrees, which is obviously a deviation from the uh-huh. Qibla,
yeah.
then that is sufficient. It's uh-huh. not necessary to do anything, and there is no objection sitting in that direction, because it is deviated. It's not right in the straight in the direction of Qibla, so it's 20 degrees. Deviated from the direction of Qibla.
Is there any specific number, like degrees, you can say that we can call it deviation?
Like
15, for example?
Well, when in common sense, a person is considered to be sitting in the direction of Qibla, mm-hmm. then it is haram. You know, when you are, look at when people around you consider you as sitting in the direction of Qibla.
Right.
Then it is haram for you to sit in that direction, or with your face or with your back towards the Qibla. So the religious authorities, as far as I know, because I've studied different religions, different Tawzih al-Masail written by different scholars, they have not stated any degree whatsoever with regards to the deviation from Qibla.
Mm-hmm,
and so
okay, thank you.
One should look at, one should consult the custom, the mm-hmm. common sense.
Okay. Thank you very much, Javid, and thank you very much for listening to this program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. From me and the rest of the crew, we say wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun Malajam Ilaha Illahum Ghaffar
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.